all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's 6:06 on this Independence Day, Thursday, the 4th of July. And while this is a largely best of Up North News Radio, I'm certain that it's another beautiful day to have you up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. And whether you're joining us through the radio or the Civic Media app or on social media or on demand by podcast, thank you very much for taking us along on your day. I've got a question here at the start of it. What you doing up so early? It's a holiday. I mean, I know what my excuse would be. I'm expecting a very full house for the holiday weekend, both daughters and their families, which means the early risers, a funny little two-year-old girl and her five-year-old big brother, are going to be coming up the basement steps anytime now, quietly crawling into grandpa's lap while we watch Bluey or something else until their parents get up. The 10-year-old will be along a little later, and the 17-year-old will probably sleep till close to noon. I've seen him do it. It's his superpower. Coming up this morning here, we're about to revisit Monday's conversation with Up North News reporter Selena Heller on a couple of different stories she's working on. One was a feature on a surrogate mom and learning about how surrogacy is easier here in Wisconsin than in some other states. And we also get into strawberry season and somehow we run far afield on, you know, picking asparagus by the railroad tracks and things like that. We're going to have a history lesson on the Inflation Reduction Act from Melissa Baldoff and talk about how it can save you money for years to come. We'll talk a little off-season summer football at the small college level here in Wisconsin with Riley Kleist. We'll visit with Bryce Luchterhand about a program to help people fleeing war-torn Ukraine and how their immigration status could be affected depending on the outcome of the election this November. And we will talk about the importance of civics, a civics education, and we'll get that discussion from two different points of view. One from the educators and another from a young woman who became the winner of the first Wisconsin Civics Bee. First, of course, I want to thank everybody who made yesterday's 60th birthday so memorable for all manner of reasons, I suspect. So please know for all the grousing about the aches and pains of having another birthday, I still feel like a kid sometimes who found a four-leaf clover, and I thank you for being a part of it. But let's jump into things. Our talk with Selena, starting with the tail end of Brittany Merlot's Monday forecast, when she already suspected the 4th of July weather was not going to be cooperative.
Expect that ground to be wet and soggy for a little bit. We do dry out a little bit on Wednesday, and there are some storm chances on Thursday and into Friday. But we'll get into all those details later. You're going to have to wait just a little bit. But it is out there. It's not heavy rain, but rain chances in there.
I'm sorry, Greg looked like he was going to address something over here.
Everyone's upset. I get it.
I'm on the 5th, we're supposed to have a cookout, and it's supposed to rain from sun up to sundown.
But yeah. Apart from that, you know,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Other than that, it's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think I'm, you know, hopefully if we all cross our fingers, yes. The storms will stay away on Thursday evening and hold off until midnight or so.
There's always the cone of uncertainty, as they like to say, you know, the storm could go this way or the other. Good morning from Tigerton. Rob writes, it's sunny and 54, going to be a beautiful day. I have mowing jobs in Wittenberg today before it rains tomorrow. I had a Walkman when I was in high school jamming to the rock and country songs of the 1980s. Brittany, what was your first personal music player?
Oh, it was definitely a Walkman, actually. A Walkman? That's crazy that he said that because
Okay. I thought maybe you were young enough, like, oh, I got some AirPods, you know, 2 years ago. That was my first, but no.
Right. What do I call myself? An elder millennial or something like that?
Good, I like it.
Where I had the phone that was plugged into the wall, you know, people had to call the parents if they wanted to get a hold of me. So I know.
Okay. All right. Selena, what was your first little personal music player?
Probably later on, I did have a Walkman. Probably I remember having that.
Yeah. Greg?
Didn't use it much, probably.
No. I had a Walkman on me I remember when I first started going to school with a Walkman, I would sneak it in because I thought I was going to get in trouble and then no one cared. But I always had a Walkman in my backpack. I was always listening to music whenever I could. sometimes when class was going on, I should have been listening in class, but that's neither here nor there, kids. The more you know.
See, I had to carry an AM console radio with me with two hands all the time. The tubes would sometimes get really hot when you carried the radio on long enough.
Grab the pack back.
Brittany, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You as well.
And folks can join us here. 855-75-CIVIC is the phone number. 855-75-CIVIC. Selena, let's talk for a bit about stories you're working on for Up North News. And that would include talking to somebody about the topic of surrogacy parenting for parents people who want to be parents, couples and individuals who want to be parents. Might be fertility issues, might be that they're a same-sex couple, all kinds of reasons. And like you were saying right before the break, there's quite a few people that are willing to experience or endure, depending on your point of view, pregnancy and childbirth on behalf of others.
Well, right. What a selfless act, huh? Mm-hmm, right. To go through all that. I mean, it's quite a process when you think about it. And a lot of people don't realize it's a big time commitment, not to mention your body goes through all of that and all of those things. But when you meet with a couple, when you match and then you talk about it, then you make a contract and all of that. I mean, it could be a 2-year time commitment for all of that. So it's quite a bit involved. And one of the mom that I was talking to, she said, people think, oh, it's easy money. So
I don't know that I'd call it easy money, but
no, but there are a lot of risks.
Okay. But there, you did find somebody in the Chippewa Valley who does this?
Yes, Britt Poplowski. She's in Eau Claire, and oh my gosh, she's an amazing person. She's an ER nurse on the weekends, full-time doctoral student during the week, and now she's in her second surrogacy with the same family. And she wanted to, she said, like you said, a lot of her friends had, their couple friends had infertility issues, or same-sex couples don't have a lot of options to have a child. So they kind of thought about that in all of this process, and they actually chose an agency that dealt specifically with same-sex couples because there's not a lot of options. And some people, she said, she was reading on all of this stuff that aren't willing to give a same-sex couple that kind of an experience. So she wanted to be a person. They wanted to be people that did this for same-sex couples and give them opportunities. So just a wonderful family, and the bond that they formed with the other family is pretty incredible.
Let's give a listen to Britt.
All right.
I can genuinely say that I would not even begin to consider even my own pregnancy, but surrogacy for sure, in a state with restricted abortion laws or things like that, because I think a lot of people don't understand the serious nature of surrogacy. Like, you genuinely have to be willing to compromise your own fertility. So one of the guidelines is that you should be done having your own children, because secondary fertility after IVF is unfortunately common. There are intended parents out there who are looking for a surrogate after losing their own fertility doing a surrogacy. And so it really is like, you have to be done having your own family, and pregnancy and labor and delivery are risky. And the statistics in the United States are disgusting. Like, they're horrible, and you have to really genuinely consider that. And if I were in a state where if something went wrong, or I had an ectopic pregnancy or a missed miscarriage, and there was nothing I could do about it but wait until it's bad enough that my life is genuinely in jeopardy, I can completely say I would not even consider being in the position that I am now if I was in a state that was a reality. And there are a lot of states right now where that is a reality, and that's terrifying.
So she really wanted to convey just to think about all of these things and take everything into consideration, all of these risks, because there are so many risks. You wouldn't, maybe potential surrogates don't think of all of that kind of stuff. But she said, you really have to stop and think. It's not just an easy process.
I mean, it really does take us into two different areas. We've talked about IVF and other parts of reproductive health that are under assault, as Britt said in that at first bite. And then you also have parenting for same-sex couples. Again, something that continues to be under assault by people on the far right, and something that she has made a very conscious decision to help a couple create a family.
Well, exactly. And there are a couple different kinds of surrogacy. She is a gestational surrogate, in which most are. And so that's where you have, you take a sperm from one parent potentially, and then a donor for eggs. And then she's the carrier. So it's, she says, like, people ask, you know, how can you give up the baby? And she said, it's not my baby. It's has nothing genetically having to do with a surrogate. But yes, yeah, they chose a same-sex couple from the Chicago area, and she will have their second baby in November. And it would be 2 years after she had the first baby. So it was November a couple of years ago where she had the first one. And she said the bond that they have shared now, and they've become friends, and it's just it's a great story. So she talks about having the baby.
There were multiple reasons why I wanted to work with a same-sex couple, and so that was ultimately why I chose the agency that I did. And then, like you said, they genuinely would have zero way to have, I mean, aside from adoption, their own child without surrogacy. And so that was really cool. It was very, I'm sure that as the years go on, the mental images will fade, but I can genuinely still see it in my head where they were surrounded by the incubator, or both of them had their shirts off and were doing skin to skin with the baby on the couch. And it was just so beautiful to watch that and to know that I was a part of helping them achieve the family that they wanted to have.
So she says she'll just always remember those things, because they got to be in the delivery room all together at the same time. So what an experience. And she said, you know, they saved up enough. It's expensive. They saved up enough money. They were an older couple. She said they've been together for more than 20 years. And just to see this finally achieved, this lifelong dream, it was just a fantastic experience.
Right. Selena's working on that story for us. You can look for upnorthnewswi.com or look for social media, upnorthnewswi, for the stories that she's working on, including that one. And we're going to talk to her more about picking your own strawberries coming up right after the break. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Monday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're mentioning among all the birthdays today, Fred Schneider of the B-52s is 73 years old today. Selena Heller's with us on Up North News Radio. And for folks who are just catching us on the radio or podcast, if you're not watching the live video feed and always wonder, you know, just how tough is it really to be a reporter? I mean, what kind of conditions do you have to go through? Whiskers has been attacking this poor girl the entire time that she's been trying to do this report. At one point, Whiskers, when she puts Whiskers off to the side, Whiskers just takes the tail and puts it right into her mouth, just flips it. And without breaking character at all, she's continuing to talk to you as she's plucking fur off her lips or her hair.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, this tail gets stuck, you know.
So definitely a theater kid.
Selena Heller, professional.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, done a lot of improv.
The cat is especially needy today, but that's all right. All right. So we've reached that point in the summer where you're maybe noticing roadside signs. Maybe you're seeing some commercials where folks can go pick their own strawberries. It's that time of year. It's that time of year for some. It will not be for me. There's things. Look, there's a grocery store. It's right down the road here. I can see it. But for others, they find that this is an enjoyable activity. Yep.
Yes. And
so you talked with somebody from one of the larger farms in the area?
Yes. And growing up, this is something we always did. And especially my dad and I, we would go every year and pick strawberries. And that was our thing. So I really wanted to Emery to do that too. Like, this is what we do. We go pick.
Oh, wait, you subjected her to this as well?
Of course. But, you know, I say you can eat.
You are such a downer.
It's fun, Pat.
Here, kid, get in the dirt and get us some food. I mean, come on.
It was just kind of more running around than anything.
Or I
just,
suppose,
like,
yes.
Playing around, yep. Eating strawberries. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. So, yes, we go every year and pick strawberries wherever. And the season is kind of winding up probably in the next couple of days here for pick your own strawberries. But we went a couple weeks ago where it was kind of just the start. Mm-hmm. So we went to Govins in Menominee, and this is John Govin talking about if you don't get to your strawberries once you pick them, what to do afterwards. You can keep them all winter and then use them in the winter. So this was kind of a hot tip.
If you're in a hurry, you can just cap them. We never wash anything. If you do choose to wash your berries, wash them and rinse them lightly before you take the caps off. But the easiest way to get them in the freezer is you pop the cap off, put them on a cookie sheet, and when they're frozen solid enough that they won't stick to each other, then you can put them in a Ziploc bag. You can take strawberries out and make strawberry jam in the winter.
So there you go. You don't have to get to them right away. And that's exactly what I
hadn't thought of it that way. What we end up doing, we do go through a lot of strawberries and blueberries here. And I will, if I know we're not getting to some right away, I will rinse them. I will dry them as best I can and then put them in, you know, in mason jars. But mm-hmm. I never thought about freezing them so that they don't stick to each other and then doing it that way.
Yeah, and a lot of people just take them out later for smoothies or whatever. Last year, I think we picked so many, and I didn't know. I wanted to make jam, so we made freezer jam. And so now I still have a lot of freezer jam. A lot of freezer jam.
Oh, I'm starting a band called Freezer Jam. We're going to be a Northwoods winter band that just plays Fish in the Dead and is like, we're freezer jam.
And, you know, for hecklers, they'll throw frozen blueberries at you. They're pelting us with frozen fruit.
Well, you guys got to pay attention.
Starting now is pick your own, like, raspberries and coming up blueberries. So be ready for that.
See, this is where I wish Sherry could be here to talk a bit about being a farm kid growing up. Because, I mean, she was not the biggest fan of the pick your own berry stuff, because again, you wanted to eat them, but you know, your mom and dad wanted to get them home and get them canned and everything. But not just that, but the, you know, the wild ones along the road as well, you know, the raspberry, I've had my share of those, you know, out in the woods and things, but then asparagus too, where it'd be like almost dinner time and, you know, her mom would give her, you know, some shears and a bucket and say, go get us some asparagus from over by the railroad tracks. Cause it grows wild, you know, out in that area. Uh-huh. And, yeah, right. See, city kids like me, and like, I can't relate to this, you know?
We had a raspberry patch and a blackberry patch. Raspberries I love, but blackberries were so much pickier, and I hated picking blackberries, but you had to strap my mom would always give me a bucket and strap it to a belt, and then you went out, and it was during fair time, and it was like, I just wanted to go to the fair, but nope, we had to pick blackberries before we did that, and blackberries, I always thought, well, you know, they're sourer, so you have to get the big juicy ones, and so they were fewer and far between, and so...
Wait, forget about my old age jokes. Listen to Grandma Heller over here. It's like, you know, we had a bucket that was strapped to us.
I would have built.
Back in my day, I just used to pick blueberries and railroad asparagus. That's all our dinner was.
If you want to eat that switch.
Well, railroad asparagus. Railroad. How about that for a band name?
Yeah, railroad asparagus opening up soon.
Freezer jam.
For freezer jam. Right.
Meanwhile, I grew up in suburban Waukesha City. I was like, oh, this can doesn't have an opener. I can't eat this.
Yeah, Sherry had never
PB&J.
Sherry had never had vegetables out of a can till she met me in college, and said, no, this is how food works out here. And I mean, what was I saying on Friday, Greg? Bomb pops. You know, I think it was the ice cream truck was coming, and would they have bomb pops in it or not? No asparagus by the railroad tracks for us.
Were you there the first time she saw spam?
Spam? Oh, yeah. Lots of spam. Love spam. What were you going to say, Selena?
We didn't ever have, like, pickles from the store, so that really wasn't a thing. So I was like, pickles from the store? Like, that's, like, that was a whole, like, kind of an exciting thing when we had pickles from someplace else, pickles from the store, even though, you know, I loved pickles.
Could you make pickles now if we?
Could I? Oh, gosh. No, I mean, we did it every year.
Don't worry, I'm not stopping over with a butter churn later and saying, now look, we're going to need some butter.
I could totally make pickles.
You could make pickles?
Yeah, the jar will have a label that says Milwaukee pickles on it, but don't worry about that. It's not important. It's
totally homemade. Yeah,
I made them 100% in my factory somewhere in the state.
Somewhere near a local grocery store. Yeah,
exactly.
Works out fine.
We made the coolest cucumber rings. They weren't watermelon rings. They had like cinnamon sticks and red hots, and they were red. So when you get the really big cucumbers, you'd carve out the middle and then have these rings. And that was kind of my mom's specialty. She would bring these everywhere. And that was our fun little, like, oh, what are these?
When did Selena leave and Laurel Ingalls Wilder suddenly came in here? living a little house on the prairie of Black River Falls. Yep. Big plans for the fourth weekend at all, Miss Heller?
Oh, gosh. A lot of times we go camping. We go to the Chautauqua area a lot of times.
Okay.
There's lots of festivities there.
All right. Well, whatever it is, enjoy it. Thanks.
You too.
Coming up next, we'll have our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. We'll go back to the early days of the Inflation Reduction Act and how we got to a point of having historic legislation that can help you save money on your energy bills and be good for the climate as well. You're up north. And we're back now at 6:34 on this Wednesday morning, Up North News Radio. Pat Kreitlow here, Melissa Baldoff over there for our weekly climate check report. This time a bit more about the political climate than the climate, but the two are very much intertwined, as you're going to find out in today's history lesson. Melissa Baldoff, good morning.
Good morning.
We realized we have talked so much about the Inflation Reduction Act from a climate standpoint in this segment, the energy efficiency credits and the rebates and the jobs that can be created. But we've also talked about the Inflation Reduction Act from a healthcare standpoint, Medicare being able to negotiate lower drug prices. We've talked about IRS enforcement. And it just seemed like this was a good time to go back to the beginning. And what is the Inflation Reduction Act that we've been talking about all of this time? And Melissa, let me start with a political premise, because we both have been involved in politics for a long time. Maybe the best way to explain what is the Inflation Reduction Act is that it's President Joe Biden's original Build Back Better plan, but after it went through the sausage grinder that is Congress. Is that a good way to give an overview of it?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a good way to think about it and to describe it. I'm excited about this little, you know, kind of living history lesson that we're doing. It's interesting to me because I just finished up a similar project at the end of the school year with my ninth grader who's going into 10th grade, had to do a project in social studies at the end of the year about the Affordable Care Act and how it came to be and what was in it and how it became law. So that's really interesting for me now to be thinking about this and how did the Inflation Reduction Act come into law? Because, you know, 10 years from now, that's going to be something that kids in school are studying, because we know that this is such a transformational piece of legislation that is going to have a generational impact. I'm excited to dig into this and talk about how this came to be and, you know, kind of what the history is.
Yeah, because a lot of this deals with President Biden's first 2 years in office when there was a Democratic House as well as a Democratic Senate. By the way, I add as a footnote, the Democratic House and Senate both had razor-thin majorities, And so compromises had to be made, looking at you, Joe Manchin, and others. But things did get done compared to the dysfunction that is the Republican-controlled House, which has the same kind of small margin, but they cannot agree amongst themselves. So President Biden came into office, and even going before that as a candidate, talked about an American Rescue Plan, which was going to help get the economy, you know, out of, you know, past COVID and through the crisis. There was this Build Back Better plan that became the Inflation Reduction Act. And there was this American Jobs Act, which we now know as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. So you had these three pieces, and then later others would come, like the CHIPS and Science Act and things like that. But Build Back Better became the Inflation Reduction Act and this multi-pronged approach. But at the time, Melissa, when Congress was debating everything that was going to be in Build Back Better, inflation was very high as the American economy was coming out of the pandemic recession. And it was a real concern, not just from Republicans, but frankly, a few Democrats that said, hey, this can't just be some big spending grab bag. There have to be things in here as well that could attack the deficit and that could lower costs for consumers, which would, you know, basically help reduce inflation. So there was that. It's much more than a wish list. There's a lot of practicality involved in this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that when you look at this, you know, all together and you think about what President Biden's commitment is to the American people, that, you know, he really took this as an opportunity to focus on, yes, the physical infrastructure, but also what he's, you know, calling that human infrastructure. So to tackle climate change, but also to, you know, take on, you know, childcare and healthcare while doing things like broadband, EVs, you know, our physical infrastructure. People were scared, and President Biden was able to come in. And like you said, even with these, you know, just razor thin majority, just barely able to get some things done, but got these incredible, huge, important things done that are going to transform this country for years and years to come. So yeah, I think it's really amazing what he's been able to accomplish. And it's really, I think, representative of what why he ran for president and what his promise was to the American people was, I'm going to get things done for you because I know you're hurting and I know what you're telling me you need, and I'm going to be responsive to those needs.
Along with Build Back Better and the American Jobs Plan, which became the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, there was also talk of an American Families Plan, and that was going to be woven into Build Back Better as well. But this is where Joe Manchin and certainly every Republican gets involved when it came to, for example, paid family leave. That was one of the things that Joe Manchin helped kill. And so it didn't make the final bill that became the Inflation Reduction Act. And in fact, Manchin not only opposed the original legislation, saying that it was spending too much and could make inflation worse, he later backed out of a compromise bill that he had done, much like Republicans are doing right now on the bipartisan border bill. But at least at some point after a period of several weeks or even a couple of months, Manchin eventually came back to the negotiating table and said, okay, the president agreed to kind of slim down some of what he wanted to do on climate. But even then, we're still making historic investments that you and I have been talking about for months now that can get done. It's just that we had to get around a senator from West Virginia who is decidedly still in the pockets of coal, if not the oil companies as well. And yet, having worked that compromise through, you still have this landmark piece of legislation, Melissa.
Right. It does make it clear that there's more work to do, right? Because like you said, we haven't addressed our childcare crisis, and it's just absolutely bonkers to suggest to families that are struggling to deal with rising costs that offering some relief for childcare, which is very often the biggest bill that anyone has in their budget. I know when my kids were both in daycare, that was bigger than my rent. And one of the reasons why I could not afford to own a home at the time. So to suggest that that's something that's too expensive is just nuts. And, you know, to see, you know, also Manchin opposing in that original deal, you know, expansion of the, you know, child tax credit, you know, so those are the kinds of things that are actually going to help.
Right.
With those, help families that are experiencing struggles due to the high cost of inflation. But like you said, we do have this piece of legislation that will help people, that is already going to be helping people save money on their energy bills, help people save money as they make improvements to their home. It's going to help make our, you know, air and water cleaner. It's going to make us have a healthier, cleaner economy as we move forward. But it is a challenge to know, you know, kind of what we could have had and what's on the line and what we can still get, but we have to choose that future where those other options are still going to be available to us and still be priorities for the people we have in elected leadership.
Right. People still chose to get something done. They weren't going to get everything that they wanted. Same with the Affordable Care Act. When that passed, we said, well, we could have done so much more if Joe Lieberman hadn't killed the, you know, the public option and things like that. So you've got room to build on a record of achievement. We clearly know that there are things that didn't make it into the final version of the Inflation Reduction Act that we can come back to. But having said that, this thing still passed. It passed in the House with every Democrat voting in favor, every Republican voting against. It passed the Senate 51-50 because Vice President Kamala Harris broke the tie, and it was all done. And Melissa, I'm just going to read off some of the provisions, and then you can pick any one or two of them that you want to talk about. Because along with all the climate provisions that we've discussed, it continued expansion of Affordable Care Act subsidies. It made changes to Medicare Part D, made insulin affordable for Medicare recipients. Here's one about the IRS. By hiring up to 87,000 new employees, you improved customer service and you made it easier to crack down on billionaire tax cheats. There's a new 1% tax on stock buybacks, which I still can't believe are a thing. They weren't a thing until Ronald Reagan allowed companies to basically, you know, replace dividends with ways to make their executives richer. And then you had a minimum corporate tax rate with companies that had more than $1 billion of income. They were no longer going to get away with so many loopholes that they basically paid no taxes. Among all those things, yeah, there's things, Melissa, that didn't get passed, but that's not a bad list for achievement in you know, one landmark bill.
Oh, absolutely not. And I think, you know, one of the ones that I hear the most from people and, you know, see so much conversation about and know what an impact it has is capping the cost of insulin at $35 a month. That is really, quite frankly, life-changing for a lot of people to know that, you know, that is critical medication, that is life-saving medication. And, you know, we've all heard horror stories over the years of people having to ration their insulin, people having to go without, people having to choose between whether they're going to pay for their insulin or they're going to buy groceries. And by capping that cost at an amount that is a lot more affordable, that is really, really going to help people, you know, manage their budget, be able to, you know, be in charge of their health care without breaking the bank. And also knowing that there is a cap on out-of-pocket drug costs at $2,000 for people on Medicare. You know, this is really something that has a huge impact for a lot of people, and is a really good step, another step in getting healthcare costs under control, because as much progress as we've made on healthcare costs are still very out of reach and, you know, can be devastating for a lot of folks. So anything we can do to be getting healthcare more affordable is going to be critically important.
And so in conclusion, you take this big picture total bill, you break it down into these various components, which include $370 billion to, you know, fight a changing climate. Take that down to what we talked about last week, $9 billion nationwide to go to home efficiencies, including $150 million coming to Wisconsin homeowners in two different programs that Kevin Kane outlined for us last week. An article on that is coming to our website shortly over at upnorthnewswi.com. And so I want to take last week's discussion on individual help right to the homeowner and say, how did we get here again? And so, Melissa, thanks for indulging me, taking a few minutes to kind of give that oral history of how Build Back Better became the Inflation Reduction Act and became these things that bring credits and efficiencies right to the home level, and that there's more work to be done. This all sounds to me like something Joe Biden can run on.
It sure does. And I hope that people, you know, really, like we always talk about, continue to learn more about this. We're going to continue talking about this as much as possible, because those credits are out there. The rebates are out there. This is money that is available to people. We want everyone to take advantage of it. These are real savings for people in Wisconsin, around the country. And, you know, they've got to take advantage of that. So hopefully we can continue to spread the word. We're going to keep talking about this, and hopefully we see more and more of these investments come into Wisconsin.
Real savings and real jobs and real impact on the climate. And that's your climate check for this week. Melissa Baldoff, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, we are about 15 minutes away from your next chance to win in the Scani Summer Statewide Text to Win Contest. You're going to need the Civic Media app for that. Get it downloaded if you haven't already. Today's history lesson is coming up next. You're up north. Steely Dan has a classic example here of a movie soundtrack song you remember, FM, but remember nothing about the movie, because the movie FM didn't do very well. But it was on this day in 1935 that we saw the first public demonstration of FM broadcasting in the United States. So I got a chance to meet with Riley Kleister, who's on the coaching staff at UW Stout, and we were talking about you know, football and sports. And I was curious as to, you know, what all has to take place in the off season at this particular level. And I know we've talked to Dan Schumacher previously in his role as athletic director at Northland College, and prior to that at UW Eau Claire. But I thought it would be interesting to hear from another perspective, in this case from a coaching standpoint of somebody who just really loves football, loves to talk about it, and is looking forward to next season. So let's bring in Riley Kleist and find out a bit more about what's going on over at Stout and what's happening at the college and the high school ranks at this time of year. Riley, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm dandy. How are you?
Dandy here as well. Absolutely. You know, this is, I find this interesting because I have a son-in-law who is the equipment manager for a hockey team, Division I hockey, Western Michigan University, Army West Point before that. And so I know that there really isn't an off season. There's always something going on, whether right. It's purchasing or maintenance or recruiting or training or what have you. And so I figure at some point in the fall, we're going to start talking about, you know, football scores in the WIAC and Stout taking on Whitewater, Eau Claire taking on Superior. But obviously work has to go on between now and then. And so at this time when you might not expect to be talking about it, people are getting the work done. Riley, what kinds of things, you know, go on at this time of year? What are you anticipating doing as you get closer to actually training for the football season?
Yeah, so players are getting their bodies and minds ready for the game, as well as coaches. We are working it's always recruiting season, so we're working on this year's recruiting class. There's always going to be some real late commits, as well as next year's recruiting class already, because it's never too early to start texting that going to be senior in high school saying, hey, man, we're interested in you. We want to get you on campus. We want to start meeting you. Because it's never a bad idea to start talking to new athletes. And then getting ready, right? Myself personally, as a younger coach, I'm still studying and learning the game and trying to be as comfortable with our playbook as possible and other teams, these schemes and ideologies, and also watching film and teach points from players gone by and players present at the professional and college level. So I'm working now to keep bettering my knowledge of the game, and players are lifting weights, and other coaches that are in the office more 24/7 they're working on recruiting and high school camps that are popping up all over the place this summer.
Tell me about the type of coaching that you're specializing in right now.
So I am the tight ends and fullbacks coach for Stout.
Go ahead.
The bigger running backs that don't get all the pretty runs, they're doing the dirty work. They're my guys. And the tight ends that sometimes think they're more offensive linemen that just want an opportunity to catch the football, they're also my boys. So.
Mm-hmm. I think so many people they first learn about the quarterback, and they learn about running backs and wide receivers, and I think, like you said, tight end is rather underappreciated until you've got a really good one or you face off against a really good one, and then you understand why you need that.
We say we're the poor man's quarterback because we need to know every bit of the offense just like the quarterback does. So, not taking a shot at receivers or running backs, but they don't always need to understand the full premise of the play, whether it's running or passing. So sometimes a receiver goes, oh, it's a run play, I gotta go dig out the safety, or I gotta, you know, down block on a linebacker. So they have to know a little bit of it, but the tight ends need to be able to work with the offensive linemen on blocking combos in a zone run scheme, and there's and also know how to run routes with the small wide receivers. So they gotta work with everybody.
And so now you've got, like you said, you've got campus visits from potential recruits going on right now. And then eventually it's early August sometime that you get going with the morning practices?
Yeah. So I don't remember the exact date, but it's early to mid August. We'll start back in fall camp. The guys will get back on, we'll get them. The first day is it's like getting everybody back from summer break or getting pads fitted. You're getting your medical stuff, paperwork turned in and all that sorted out. Just getting ready for the academic and athletic year and getting everybody back in order and get them in their locker and have a little bit of a reunion. And then day two, you're on the practice field and you're working.
So, now you're a lot younger than me, but yet even at your young age, you know about the changes that have come to football practice from a safety standpoint.
Yeah.
in two different areas. There's been a lot of talk about concussions, but then there's also talk about the summer practices used to be, you know, everybody knows the phrase two-a-days, and you'd be doing that in 90 degree weather. So Riley, even in the time that you've gone from, you know, high school player to college player to you know, college coaching staff, you've seen changes in ensuring the safety of football players in the summer.
Yeah. So I'm a lot younger than probably the majority of coaches, and if not all of them. But even in my playing days for youth football to high school football, and now into the college world and seeing how different practices are run, I remember, you know, I was playing football at, you know, the youth level and the high school level when concussions and the ideology and the belief system and the importance of them kind of changed. So I remember when you got your bell rung, you kind of just walked it off type of thing. And then it became, there was testing and mandatory testing. And now there's baseline testing for all athletes. So the game, the way you tackle somebody has changed, and it's going to continue to change. And it's even changed at the professional level going into this year. You can no longer perform a hip drop tackle as a defensive player on an offensive player. And then with that, there's different technology out there. So there's helmets that are now geared towards offensive linemen who have more repetitive but shorter distance impact head-to-head contact. They just have an extra bit of padding in the front. And there's now, they look like really big hat, like beanie hats you put over your helmet, and they're called guardian caps. And now they're approved to be used at in-game use, at least at the NFL level. And that's part of practice now. So if we have a player who has a history of concussions or just chooses to wear one for their own safety, they can put a guardian on, and it's just a big marshmallow that's on top of their head. So, and then two-a-days, we'll have a real practice in the morning, and then we'll be on the field, no contact, just walking around and kind of getting a live look at the playbook instead of just looking at it on a PowerPoint.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of the 3D version. Riley, I'd like to get you back here to talk about this some more as we get closer to practice. I mean, we've got questions that we don't have time to answer now, like Tony asking about NIL, name, image, and licensing deals, you know, the difference between Division III and Division I. There's that whole mystery of the transfer portal that we hear about at that level and so much more. So, Riley, come on back again as we get closer to summer practice getting going. We'll talk about the WIAC and where football teams are going, but we really appreciate getting to meet you and hearing more of your perspective today, Riley. Thanks so much.
Yeah, excellent. No problem, Pat. Anytime, just let me know when you want me back and we can make her happen.
All right. Looking forward to it. Riley Kleist, thanks again so much.